Sandy?
Yeah, I agree entirely, yeah, to get rid of money. And because, there's another issue with this, which is about mystification. The financial media, you know, the Financial Times and all the rest of the newspapers and articles about the money system, always mystifying. You know, I've read them and sat down and tried to understand them hundreds of times, the articles in the Financial Times, in the Time, you know, the regular Times, etc., the financial pages. You sit there and you just cannot work out what the hell it means.
Well, it's just
directly mystifying.
But it's just very complicated, I think.
But I don't think it is. I think it's directly made complicated. It's made complicated so you don't understand that it's quite simple underneath.
I think that's their argument, isn't it? That it's very simple and it's...
Yeah. So it don't have to be. I mean, have you ever tried to read the Financial
Yeah,
Times?
I've tried. It's really hard.
Exactly. Would you come away thinking to yourself, well, what actually is that about? I mean, you've got it's that uses language that other people don't use. It has concepts that are not in daily use with everybody. They operate as behind a closed door of language that is not that you can't access. There's no explanation. There's no key at the bottom saying, you know, this means this, that, and that. It's nothing. It's just presented there as like a, well, here you are. You know, this is what's happening. This is what's happening in these banks and in this business. And you're supposed to be able to say, okay, oh, fine, that's fine. But it's not. It's like, well, what does that mean? What is going on? I think it's there directly to mystify us and to hide really a sleight of hand. I think there's something in that sleight of hand.
I mean, the Financial Times isn't meant for people like you and me. It's meant for capitalists. But having said that, I mean, that's why the Financial Times has to provide accurate information, because it's you know, in capitalist investors take their investment decisions on the basis of what they read in papers like the Financial Times. But I mean, all the quotes I gave, in fact, were from the Times newspaper, and what I was trying to suggest is if you do read them carefully, you can see that they don't accept the theory put forward in there, because they might have other reasons for wanting to make things unclear. I mean, all this stuff about derivatives and what were they and securitization, hedge funds, subprime things. Well, if you persevere, you can work out what they're saying. But all these for instance, with the Greek debt, it's an argument between debtors and creditors, and papers like Financial Times always takes the side of the creditors. But you had people who were betting on Greece failing, so that if it was heads they won, tails they won, because if there was a deal, it would be all right. If it failed, it would be all right as well, you know. But all these complicated things that the people in the City of London do, they are complicated sort of dodges and wheeling and dealing, because they don't produce anything in the City of London. All they're doing is gambling and playing with profits that have already been made in industry. But
it could be anything then.
Maybe it's me. I can.
It could be that, and it could be what you say. It could be anything.
Yeah, yeah.
It's up for grabs, really, because nobody knows.
Well, some people do know. I'm in the same boat as you. I don't understand.
Tom, let's have you in a bit, yeah? We'll just go through the chair because there's and then you say your point, yeah? So,
sorry.
Colin?
Yeah, obviously, I've come here out of interest. I'm still looking at all this stuff. I parted company with the Socialist Party about 10 years ago. There were lots of reasons for that, but I wanted to continue my own research and self-education into all sorts of things. So I want to bring the discussion round now, not to looking at what's wrong with the present system, but about the future system, and what you said at the last in your summing up, about the need to get rid of money completely and to create a world of free access, free use and access.
Hmm.
How is this going to be put across to the public? What has to happen for people to want to abolish money voluntarily? Does it have to be imposed? Would that be required? To each according to their ability, to their need, from each according to their ability. How is that going to be introduced? Surely it cannot be imposed.
No.
It would not work if it had to be imposed or
the
introduction of that. But, so I'd like to just explore that a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, abolition of money is a very shorthand and possibly misleading thing of what we want. I mean, you could abolish money now and you kept capitalism, it would be utter chaos. I mean, so what correct way of expressing what we're saying, if you like, is to say we want a society, social system, in which money wouldn't be necessary because it would be redundant. So what we actually want is for all the Earth's resources to become the common heritage of everybody. Mm-hmm. So they can be used to produce things for use. But if you had that, as a consequence of that, money would disappear. So that's
abolishing the wage labour relationship.
Other aspects, production for profit, working for wages. But you're quite right. I mean, that's what we said in the discussion, before the film came on about the conditions for establishing socialism. Was what we're talking about.
Yes.
So, in our sense, socialism. One of the conditions is that people must want it and understand it and be prepared to participate in bringing it into being and to keeping it in being. So you're quite right. You couldn't impose this, by dictatorship. If you wanted to be charitable towards Lenin and the Bolsheviks, you could have said that's what they tried to do. They seized power. And then
that's what Pol Pot tried to do.
They tried to impose socialism on people in conditions which weren't right. But I mean, there are all sorts of reasons why Russia failed. But I mean,
okay, so it's through education essentially.
Well, at the moment, what we're engaged in doing is spreading socialist ideas.
Yes. But if ever I am in company, and I admit that the people of today are probably not the ones that are going to introduce socialism. Any talk of a world of free access, the abolition of money, is met with ridicule.
Well, it depends who you're talking to, isn't it? I mean, one of the
not in this room, obviously.
No, but one of the good things, if you like, about this Zeitgeist movement, which became a phenomena, because they sort of appeared at the right time in 2008, is that they have spread this idea that it's not so ridiculous. To get rid of money for all their other faults and things and theories, but I mean that idea is now more in the public domain, as it were, than it was before.
I've read a book recently published by a chap called Miller called The Failing Logic of Money, and it is really, really good, apart from the end bit, which is but I would want to go further and suggest that this more advanced society is going to require a complete sea change in the way that people view the world.
Yes.
Well, one of the ways in which that might be introduced is by people, now I'm carefully picking my words, becoming more spiritually enlightened by seeing the world in a different way, by recognising that from science as well as spirituality, that we're all one.
We're all part of the world and the biosphere and things. But no, I mean, that's not quite what I would understand by a change in people. I mean, people today, if you like, they don't have to change all that much compared to have socialism. It's a question of people cooperate today to do things.
They do, but capitalism turns people against each other.
That's what I'm saying. It's the economic system of where people are. Everybody is in competition with each other. Workers are in competition with capitalists. Capitalists with capitalists, and individual workers are in competition. But that's what I'm saying. It's the economic situation that causes that type of behaviour. If people get agree. The change of ideas, if you like, is to change agreement to change the economic system, and then people will behave differently. I mean, it's not quite the same as what you're saying, that you have to convert people to some sort of spiritual view different zeitgeist, I suppose, is the
cart and the horse, isn't it? Which comes first? Encouraging people to see the world in a different way, or changing the capitalist system?
Well,
where in which everyone is pitted against each other, country against country, against company.
But I mean, given capitalism, that can often be what can seem to be a rational way to behave, can't it? I mean, it's
well, it obviously is. Otherwise, people wouldn't accept it. They think that competition is a way to produce.
Well, they don't think that. That's the situation that they find themselves in, and the way they're forced to behave.
Right. Yeah. And human nature isn't fixed.
Exactly.
So that, but I'm sure that the Socialist Party are never going to entertain any kind of non-materialist ideas.
What's wrong with the idea of thinking? I mean, socialists talk about what it is, the brotherhood of man and things like that. I mean, that's socialists are not individualists, selfish individualists. I mean, what's the word socialism mean? But social.
But I mean by that as well that the socialist view is that we live in a material world, full stop.
Yes,
there's nothing else beyond that.
Yes, that's quite true. Yes. Well, I think it's a view.
And that's fair enough. I know lots of people who think that, but there are others, and there's a whole movement of people who believe that this world is an illusion. This isn't the real world.
You know how, what's his name, Samuel Johnson disproved that, didn't you? He kicked a stone, so this is real.
But
it's not an illusion.
Yes, but particle physics is showing that it isn't solid.
Well, no, nobody said it was solid. It's solid at this level.
Yeah, but atoms, it's been shown, are not material. At the subatomic level.
Well, we're getting into philosophy. But as a matter of fact, the answer would be the whole universe is one thing, and the atoms are just parts of the universe which we've identified to try and explain what's happening in the universe. So, I mean, it's
everything came from one speck which exploded.
I don't know about that, but everything is part of everything. Everything is part of everything.
Anyway, I wanted just to add that.
Yes, fair enough.
Yeah, it's good to have other things articulated. Pat.
Yes, right.
You're next, Tom.
Well, I'd like to go back before going forward. This idea that the things put about economics, you know, in the Financial Times, and it's sort of deliberately made hard to understand. And I think that if you start from understanding the basis of the capitalist system, how capitalism works, and, you know, I couldn't explain some of the things that happen in the financial world, and I certainly don't. I don't think ignorance is a good idea. You know, it's important to understand as much as you can about how the system works. But the actual basis of the capitalist system that the speaker referred to earlier, that a minority own the means of production, the majority, and here's the common identity, the common class identity of those who don't own the means of production but cooperate to do all of the work. Now, the difference between the value of what they produce and what is pocketed by the capitalist class, which is called surplus value. Now, that I think is something that which should be pushed, something for people to get worked up about, the difference between what they as a class produce and what is pocketed by the capitalist class. And there's been quite a bit recently about philanthropists, and these poor philanthropists, who I find difficult to say the word, but they have this terrible problem, you know, they want to give money away and about their taxes. Well, where did their money come from? How did all those millions of, you know, that wasn't created, you know, by a bank, you know, just writing money out. It was produced out of the sweat and toil of the working class.
It's like giving with the left hand and taking with the... I don't know.
That's where this money comes from. And that is the basis. That's really the thing to understand. And that is the point of workers then saying, and workers from every sphere of the working class, you know, from the what I would say from the boardroom to the gate, as it were, every sphere understanding that common identity and saying, look, we run this system. Why not abolish capitalism? Why not run the system on our own behalf, which in fact would be on behalf of the whole of humankind? And these are the sort of basic sort of propositions. We don't need the metaphysical, and I can take the real world is actually the world as we see it. And the evidence of people going to work and what they're producing is actual physical evidence. And so, just to round off, the common class identity of the way of doing all the work, why not abolish capitalism and do the work on behalf of all mankind, humankind?
Tom?
Well, I was just trying to say to
Sandy.
Yeah, it's just that I don't believe that it's mystifying, like on purpose, like you said. I honestly believe that it's just a very complicated thing, and it takes a lot of hard work to understand. But I do believe that there is a kind of a mystification in some way, and that is that. In economic magazines and so on, it's the mystification I believe that is there is that capitalism is kind of the only way possible anymore. Like, we've tried everything else, and it's not even talked about. Like, capitalism is no, like, life is talked about in terms of capitalism, and it's like it's a part of real. It's talked about as if it's a part of real life that you just can't avoid, and that's what I think is the mystification that I think is going on.
Like it's natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's natural.
That's fair
yeah.
enough.
Yeah. We'd agree with that. Yeah. Sandy.
Yeah, I mean, what you're trying to say, and which I agree, is that there's so many givens that aren't explained.
Yeah.
So. Acceptable givens, the acceptable standard from where you're reading this from,
yeah,
is that you are reading it from the acceptable view that it's acceptable to profit from. and that's all agreed and given, yeah. And you know, that's the establishment point of view, which runs through all of media.
Yes,
it doesn't need explaining. So, and it's a conservative point of view. It's actually essentially it's also
a Labour Party nowadays.
Well, yeah.
They have the same basic.
That's
conservative. The small C. Small C.
That's conservative. Yeah. It's right point of view, which is that and so many givens. There's so many givens,
yeah.
and you think, well, that really. And so when you get a point of view that comes in that is essentially different to that,
yeah,
that's so, then explained. You know, that's a left-wing point of that's too left-wing, and so then rather than explain what their view is never explained. It's insidious. It's there. It's accepted that we all have it. So yeah, so like that's why it's coming from that basis. All these other jargons, mystifications, can then kind of roll on top of that and which don't have to be explained either, so it can end up being like another language, which it is. But I'd rather take the lady's point up there.
I think there is like definite. I don't think it's like nonsense. I don't think it's made up nonsense, but it is very hard to understand. And they do. It is used to. It is kind of used like people don't have knowledge, so they can't understand it, and that is used to take advantage of. People who don't have education or don't understand
it. Yeah, but it is nonsense because it's not properly explained.
So there is some.
It's not explained in school, it's not explained anywhere.
Okay. Apart from
if you
take out
in high school. We go back to go through the chair, shall we? Again. Adam, you were gonna speak about perhaps the left wing, were you?
Well, I can do, yeah.
Sandy's mentioned the left wing and what our take on what the left wing is.
Mm.
And yeah, maybe a bit more about this. Well, something you said when you came before, Sandy, was to do with the mystification there, to do with the fact that it's kind of hidden that we're living in a class society, you know, and that's a sort of, I would say that's a definite kind of mystification there, you know, but Adam, if you can go on to talk about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't...
Yeah, make...
It's not really related, I suppose.
Well, no, I was thinking you made the point yourself that because you misunderstood Conservative with a capital C and Labour with a...
mm-hmm.
I mean, both the right-wing, you know, Conservatives and left-wing Labour, accept the status quo, you know, accept the present system. I mean, we wouldn't call ourselves left-wing, really. I mean, because, you know, we're socialists, but of course, like what's the name said there, if you call yourself socialist, you're assumed to be left-wing, and all sorts of groups which claim to be socialist or whatnot, well, which use the word socialist, which in our opinion wouldn't be socialist, because they see capitalism as private enterprise, as the free market, and what they want is state enterprise and state control of the market. So I mean, that's not our position. You know, we're against state capitalism, private enterprise capitalism, and so on. But you know, to come back to the to
so what, you're not left wing. You know, you wouldn't consider yourself a left wing.
Well, no, we wouldn't consider ourselves to be left wing, but because left wing is it's part of the spectrum of capitalist politics, if you like. I mean, other people will consider us left wing, but you know, mistakenly.
But you want to abolish politics. In that way.
Well, no, I mean, we don't accept that. Not a mystification, if you like. Look, what politics is about is right wing versus left wing,
right.
Private enterprise versus state enterprise, and that sort of thing. Well, we don't take sides in that particular argument, because you know you've had state run capitalism, like in Russia, and that's not what we want, or other parties, what they like, you know, what they call Socialist Workers Party, militant, and so on. You know, they stand for nationalisation and government. Well, they would still maintain production for the market, production for profit, but it would be run by the state. But also, you've got other people, Greens, that still want to maintain that, where the competing units are cooperatives or something like that. So, I mean, no, we don't use those labels with regard to ourselves. We say we're socialists, and the issue is socialism versus capitalism in all its forms.
Mm. Yeah,
but we're outside of that political spectrum. You know, for nationalisation programmes and stuff, we've nothing to do with that, you know.
Yeah.
We're not about managing money, whether it's, you know, by the state or the private firms or whatever.
But I mean, to come back to another point that you were talking about, in economics textbooks, which are taught in schools as well as in university, I mean, they define economics as the allocation of scarce resources amongst competing ends, and they say they're assuming that there's scarcity, and therefore you have to have a price on, so therefore you have to have money. I mean, that is implicit in what people are taught in
scarcity is kind of a necessity.
But their definition of scarcity is the absence of absolute abundance. But I mean, that's not the real issue. The real issue is, can we? I mean, obviously, human needs are not infinite. So if you agree that that what people need has is limited in obviously much more than what most people get today, then the question becomes, have we got the resources to produce enough of what people want and need? It's a different argument. Different argument, yeah. So our answer is yes. You know, we can quote the statistics from World Health, Food and Agriculture Organization, and other people that have done research in this sort of thing. So, in fact, you could even say that socialism isn't really an economy.
There is a problem with the word socialism, though, isn't there?
Yes.
In the public's eye.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. It's the word's been hijacked by.
The same is true of anarchism, isn't it, Colin?
Yeah.
Basically, anything is hijacked. Every word is hijacked. Peace has been hijacked.
Well, the word anarchism isn't. Is gets a bad press, doesn't it? For yes. various reasons.
Absolutely.
But the more positive interpretation of anarchism is never aired. Mm. It's good. It's a threat to.
Well, I mean, it's the same with Marxism, socialism, all, I mean, all words, but I mean, we're always careful to define what our terms are, and we carefully define what socialism is. Now, you're right. It does involve starting off by saying what socialism isn't. You know, socialism isn't Russia, socialism isn't equal sharing, socialism isn't Sweden, socialism isn't kibbutz, socialism isn't nationalisation. We have to go through all the things, but it isn't. But I think we're, if you like, lumbered with the word socialism. We're in this tradition. We call the Socialist Party. We've used it for over 100 years, and other people have used it before us for you know, 60 or 70 years before that. So, I mean, we could abandon it, I suppose, but what would you put in place? You know, I mean, there's a story about a breakaway from the Socialist Labour Party in America, which called themselves the Economic Democracy League. You know, and they start explaining what it is, and somebody says, "Oh, that's socialism, isn't it?" You know, so we have to. Well, you know, it is a bit of a cross we have to bear, if we can use it. But I think socialism still does have in people's minds. Not it isn't all associated with Russia and Labour governments. It still has the idea of, you know, equality and community and society. But,
I'm calling it self-government.
Self-government. Mm-hmm.
The organisation of our own affairs formed by ourselves.
Yeah, okay, so self something, yeah, yes, okay. So.
Without recourse to hierarchies and domination.
Yeah, yeah, well, yes, it's. Well, I mean, obviously, socialism will be common ownership, but then that means all the productive resources, you know, belong in common to everybody. I mean, they're just there to be used. You have to organise democratically, and socialism will be a participatory democracy, if you like, on the basis of common ownership, yeah. I mean, self-administration, I think we might be better than self-government, but we can argue about words, you know. Self-management was a word they used to use, wasn't it, in the 1960s and 70s.
Association and self-government.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, that's the sort of thing, yes.
Yeah. But these are all terms which are neglected by the media for obvious reasons. It's very difficult to get them out there, out to the general public.
Well, we do our best. We publish pamphlets. We contest elections. But there's a case in the paper today. Political advertisements are banned in English, so the radio and television can't accept political advertisements. Some Christian group wanted to put something on, and they went to the court, and they got the advertisement was refused by the advertising authority, and the court upheld that decision, saying you cannot have political advertisements in Britain, but you can in other countries. You know, in America we've had paid broadcasts, and in New Zealand, but not.
Could the SPGB ever afford? What is the situation concerning party political broadcasts?
Well, if we put up enough candidates, we would get a party political broadcast.
Yeah, it has to be a minimum number, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. You'd have to be. It's quite a few. It's about 8, yeah, I think. Something like that. Yeah, because Scargill and his party did, didn't they? And they contested seats everywhere just to do it. But I mean, it would be expensive to do that.
Even the Natural Law Party did it because they had enough money to put up some candidates.
Yes, 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 yes.
You know, I mean, form for 5 minutes and they gave broadcasting time, particularly. That's the only way that you put up enough candidates, you get the time.
Hmm. Yeah.
There's a document in the archives of the party which someone must have worked on and gathered all loads of information which is about the party trying to get itself on mainstream media. And that sort of has been documented from about 1923 to 1990, I think it was. And it makes interesting reading, the backwards and forwards letters that are going backwards and forwards between us and the BBC and this, that, and the other, and the BBC saying things, well, we let minority views be shown from time to time.
Yes, it does.
And then it goes, then another letter comes back saying, right, well, we're thinking time to time is at least once every few years, and then there's a programme that appears that is wanting to hear and is calling for particular political views. It's been advertised in the newspapers, and then So the party goes for, you know, trying to be on this programme. Oh, sorry, we're not looking for this at this particular time, you know, when it seems it would have thought that would be the ideal time to express what we're about.
I mean, we have been on the radio and television. I mean, during the last European parliamentary elections, we had a list in London. And I was driving in my car. Somebody phones me on an interview on a mobile phone, but they broadcast one sentence. You know, that maybe we'll pick up some votes from Labour or something. And that's all they said. But I said a lot more than that. You know, that's the thing they picked out. So, but when what we've been trying to get is a programme which we make and we control, which is, you know, we've been on quite a few times actually on various radio and television. Well, more radio than television, I think.
They're more snippets, aren't they, rather than in-depth kind of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's easy enough, though, to put your point of view over. If you're a multimillionaire, you just buy a paper. I mean, Richard Desmond, for example, with his pornographic empire, he made him so much cash, he bought the Daily Express and the Star. You could do the same, you see? No problem. you'll have to get going a bit faster, though, but it's money. If you have money, you can put your view over. And if you don't, you can't. Quite simple. But it's beyond that, because everything that comes over the radio or the television is predicated on the assumption of capitalism. You know, you have all the programmes assuming that we've got capitalism and that it will be there forever. And this is what happens.
Right. Any more questions while the technicians get to work?
When the what I think of as the second coming of CND, they got well underway, if you like, without getting on to the main media. They did it at times by old-fashioned methods of holding meetings in church halls. The other, and it came the other way round. They got on because they'd grown without being noticed by...
It's a bit of a discussion we always have, is, you know, it's the television's fault, it's the fault we're not on television. But I think if we were bigger and more significant, they would come and ask us to be on the it would be so the important thing is
we had massive and diverse support, didn't we? Whereas we've got a consistent policy which we all agree upon. In CND you would get 1,000 different points of view focused on one issue, which was initially was that the British government shouldn't make bombs.
Give a moral lead or something. No, but I mean that's the point. If you do have a movement going, then they will. We don't want to do stunts and things, but.
Seems to me there's no point in any radical trying to jump straight to the mass media.
Well,
right off to mass media. And rather work on the grassroots, rather than in the way that the transition movement, they use the phrase under the radar. But it does mean that they try to speak to potentially sympathetic people. And it seems to me that all the numerous special interest groups which exist, there are many individuals I know who are sympathetic to the concept of socialism as expressed here, and especially if it's democratic parliamentary time.
It's funny you should mention the transition group, because we're contesting the elections in for the Greater London Council, and one of the seats we're contesting is Merton and Wandsworth, and they have these husting meetings, and one's been organised by the Wimbledon Transition Group. But they haven't invited us to speak. They've invited four of the other candidates, so I've written them a letter saying, are we going to be invited? You know, I think they'll probably reply yes, but I mean, they but what do these transition group people say? Because we need some ammunition against them. What do they say? They transition to a carbon-free economy or something, is it? Because the electoral system is there, you might as well use it. That's a... If you don't, of course, you leave it in the hands of the people that support the present system, and they can, you know, they can use it to stop you simply taking over the means of production. So that was Marx's big argument in against anarchists, that there must be a need to get control of the state machine. But it's not we don't want to form a government. We don't want to. We just think that people should when they're socialists should use it. It's a means to as soon as common ownership has been established, you can get rid of political power, which is the armed forces, police forces, forces of coercion and repression. So there are plenty of anarchists that have the same goal as us, society of common ownership, democratic control and production, for use. But our disagreements with them, or differences with them, would be how to proceed to get there. That's the thing. We contest elections. We put up candidates in elections, and we think that's the way. But that's only a means. The important thing is that the majority of people, must be in favour of it and prepared to organise and participate in the change.